Good morning. Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Living with Emunah. Always great to be together. Davin, today is a day of Besoros Tovas, Yeshuas, V'Nechamas, for Klal Yisrael. We share good news from Israel and around the world. This morning's shir, today's shir, Emunah series in general, is sponsored by Dr. Zavi and Bella Morgan in memory of Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbin, in memory of Bella's mother, Dr. Ellen Chanzer. We remain tremendously grateful to the Morgans. It's also The series is co-sponsored anonymously in memory of the fallen soldiers and alumni of B'nai David Mechinan Yeshiva in Eli, an incredibly holy and special place. This week's shir is dedicated to the refuah shleima of the soldiers who were recently injured in Lebanon, some of whom were severely injured, one of whom is the son of our series sponsor, Ayah ben Meirav, Ayah ben Karen, Ariah ben Esther, B'nai Chevron ben Avital, David ben Sima, Yanun ben Aurit, Yanun ben Hadassah, Matan Mordechai ben Meira, Mitana ben Sivia. They should all have a complete, a speedy, a painless refuah shleima. We daven from the bottom of our hearts. Their sacrifice is enormous. All of our eyes and focus is on Iran, but there is a outright war being fought in the north with Hezbollah, with some of our heroes in Lebanon, on the ground, in the air, and these were severely injured. We daven for only good news and a complete, complete refuah shleima. Our divrei Torah and our personal growth in emunah should be in their merit. This morning's shir is sponsored by Joyce and David Mueller, commemorating the yahrzeits of her parents, Leizer Reuven and Yitzchak Halevi, and from Abbas Mordechai, by Martha Smoley, commemorating her mother's yahrzeit, Gertrude Handler, by the Ellis family, in loving memory of Zisra ben Shlomo Lev, Stephen Ellis, on his first yahrzeit. May all their neshamas have an aliyah. Today is also Corey Reichenberg's yahrzeit. We miss our beloved Corey, and we dedicate our learning to Corey's memory as well. Okay. Before we dive into our learning, Rav David Abuchatzera, and I want to really round out and finish this parak of this beautiful sefer, because one of our listeners shared with me, I didn't even know, one of my rebbeim, the Gerer Rosh Hashiva of Sheol Alter, has an entire beautiful essay on Kapitel Chav Gimel, and I want to learn it together. So appropriate. We've been talking all about the Psalm 23 sightings. Kapitel Chav Gimel is a beautiful, beautiful essay, a very beautiful holy Jew who I admire and love very much. So we'll get to that, but first I want to make our way through the rest of Rav David Abuchatzera. But before we do that, we darshan up, we learn together some of the emails, But before we even get to an email, I want to read to you an article. We know that at the beginning of this war, that today is day 12 or 13, at the beginning of this war, there was a missile attack that one of the missiles went through and landed and hit a shul where many were in a bomb shelter in Beit Shemesh, and tragically, three children were killed. Nine were killed. Horrific, unimaginable. And there was an article that caught my eye about Beit Shemesh family clings to God after three children killed by Iran. Tamar Biton was in the kitchen when an explosion rocked her home in the central city of Beit Shemesh on Sunday, shattering the windows, collapsing the ceiling. Making her way to what was left of a window, she saw fire, destruction everywhere. I couldn't find my kids, but I was sure they'd be able to rescue them from underneath the rubble. And that was not to be. It took 24 hours to identify the bodies of three of her four children. Yaakov, about to celebrate his 17th birthday that night. Avigal, 15, and Sarah, 13. They were among nine people killed on Sunday when an Iranian missile demolished a shul and several homes in Beit Shemesh. I think it's important to be aware, because we're focused on miracles, and there are undeniable miracles, and the miracles are all around in Israel. And as Rimon and others have pointed out, the intelligence community estimated that if Iran unleashed its arsenal at one time in a way that Israel's air protection couldn't all protect, there could be as many as 30,000 casualties. And the fact that the number is obviously a tiny fraction of it is a miracle. It's a revealed. It's not a hidden. It is a revealed miracle. I don't know about you, if you have children, grandchildren, family in Israel, you wake up several times a night and you check. And this morning, you know, several more salvos in Israel, zero injured. And you just say, these are miracles. Miracles. Not hidden miracles. Not some rabbi giving a drasha trying to pull on heartstrings miracles. Not some rabbi who gives an emunah shir trying to convince people to have emunah miracles. I'm talking the biggest heretic denier in the world just has to look at this, and these are miracles. But with all the miracles of the last 12 days, and the miracles we hope continue, it's important to see articles like this and remember who paid the price, and who was Moser Nefesh, and who gave their lives for the Jewish people and the Jewish homeland. This woman who lost three of her four children. Why am I sharing it with you? Because it's important to also pause and grieve and remember and feel pain. Yes, we focus on miracles. Yes, we celebrate with joy and gratitude. Yes, Rav Rimon told us, say Tehillim, but then also honor Purim, because the miracles of this Purim were greater than the miracles of the original Purim. All that's true. But we also have to pause and grieve and connect with those who doesn't feel like there were miracles. But anyway, this article traces this remarkable woman, Tamar Biton, who lost three of her four children. It took 24 hours, and she describes, at first she hoped that they were okay. Then she hoped that they were injured but would recover. And then she just hoped that they would be found. And then when they came and asked her for DNA, she understood. She said, quote, "I said to my husband, please let something be left of them. Do you think it's just ash and that's why they can't identify them?" In any case, Yitzchak Biton says he hopes opening yeshiva in honor of his children. He aimed at encouraging unity among Israel's youth. They sanctified Hashem's name with their life and also after their death, and they continue to sanctify his name. Why am I telling you all of this for this quote? Tamar Biton, this mother who lost three of her four children, said, quote, "Faith isn't built in a day. Faith is a gift from God, and faith is what gives you the ability to stand in front of these challenges, these experiences, in front of these waves. Faith is not built in a day." What she's saying is she spent her entire lifetime preparing to find the strength and the faith and the fortitude to withstand that moment. And if she has any capacity, and we don't know, when the camera's off and the interviewer's gone, we don't know, but if she has any faith in order to endure, to in a moment lose three of her four children, she says, faith is not built in a day. And it's one of the messages and themes we come back to, is that emunah is a muscle we work out. And if you don't, it atrophies and it dies. And when you need that muscle to balance, to secure yourself, to lift, if you haven't worked it out and it's not strong, it won't be there for us. And so sometimes we're tempted to think and to say, I live under palm trees in beautiful weather. I sip pina coladas. My life is good. Everyone in my home is healthy. Everyone's doing well. Everyone who I want married is married. Everyone who I want to have be having babies is having babies. My paycheck is coming in and getting cashed. I'm good. I don't have to go to the Amuna Shir. I'm good. I don't have to work on Amuna. I'm good. I don't have to daven super hard. I'm good. And it's wrong. And it's fragile. And it's vulnerable. And it's dangerous. First of all, the person for whom everything is good doesn't know. Everything was good for Tamar Biton. Everything was good. Until in a moment it wasn't. And for all of us, God forbid, we don't know which test, we don't know which moment, which result, which crossing the street, God forbid, a billion times. We don't know. And we can't wait for the crisis. If we wait for the crisis to find emunah, it's never too late, of course. And you can, but it's a whole lot harder. But when we work on the emunah in advance, emunah is not built in a moment. Emunah is not built in a moment. It's when things are hunky-dory, going well, fantastically fine. When it's all good is when you should spend that time working out. It's when you spend that time. A person can't wait for the heart attack to start going to the gym. A person can't wait for the stroke, God forbid, to go for a walk. It's God forbid if those challenges or crises coming, the more that you worked out before, the better you're going to withstand and the quicker you're going to bounce back. And what's true physically is true spiritually. And when I saw that article, I, like you, felt, of course, the pain, the grief, the connection, the empathy, the sympathy with Klal Yisrael, with this family. We will come out victorious on the other side of this war. Many feel that we've already been victorious. Everything else is icing on top, from Israel's perspective at least. We know we will. With complete faith, we will. And we will see and we will celebrate those miracles. But we also have to pause to remember that not everybody had only miracles. There are people who paid a heavy price. This woman, three or four children, the sponsor of our series, a patron of that wonderful Mechina and Yeshiva, whose son should have a complete refuah shlema together with others. For all those who have the many miracles, there are others who are not. And emunah is not built in a day. Emunah takes work. And when you have the time and the bandwidth and the heart, that's when we work on the emunah, so that if or when, because inevitably and invariably, I don't know anyone who doesn't need to have emunah at some point in their life. Nobody yet has figured out how to live forever. Nobody has to live forever. Someone told me recently, their father used to say, every death is a sudden death. No death happens slowly and gradually. Every death is a everyone dies. It's a question of when and the challenge that comes with it and from it. And so the sooner and the earlier we work on ourselves and our emunah, the more prepared we are. And I found that to be a very, very powerful insight from her, from this woman. Hashem should bless her and give her strength and comfort. Someone passed East 23rd Street and thought of Tehillim Chaf Gimel. Thank you. Psalm 23 continues. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, my name is such and such. I'm a top 2% listener of Living with Emunah on Spotify. It's a new flex. It used to be I drive this car, I wear this clothing, I have that watch. The new flex is what percent listener you are on Spotify of Living with Emunah. I like it. I say that because despite all the Emunah I've been learning and practicing, I found myself in a situation that's truly testing my limits. This was written to me last week. I flew into Israel last week for a family simcha, and while I knew that a war with Iran was a possibility, I thought I'd make it out of the country beforehand. I've heard you say that a person can embrace their place in a full emunah without their feeling being a contradiction, and I've been trying to focus on that teaching. The feelings of anxiety and stress are overwhelming, and I've missed so much that I've got going on in America. I can't help wonder where all my tefillos have gone. I recently lost my precious grandfather. All my tefillos for refuah shlema seemingly also went nowhere. I'm davening for personal yeshuas and yeshuas for Klal Yisrael, and if I'm being completely honest, it's getting really hard. I'm writing this to you in a mamad that I barely left for the past few days, a safer, a bomb shelter. I'm grateful that my family is safe, that we have the Iron Dome, but I just can't help this feeling that I'm alone. And I'm struggling with the fact that I feel like my tefillos are going unanswered. And I know you're extremely busy. Any chizik would give me would be truly appreciated. I appreciate her reaching out, and I appreciate her sharing honestly her vulnerability and how she's feeling. And I think many do. Often we daven for something. It could be a shidduch, and it could be health, and it could be parnasa, and it could be a flight and a return, and it feels like, why isn't he answering, and where is he, and what's supposed to happen? I think perhaps among the biggest challenges, and I hope casualties, we just talked about the loss of life and those who were injured, which of course are the real casualties, but what Iran introduced, which is exactly the methodology of Amalek. Amalek, we're still in the month of Adar, and we're still in the aftermath of Purim, and maybe you saw, because it went around everywhere, the Halig of B'nai Yisachar, the great B'nai Yisachar, wrote a long time ago that the great war with Amalek will begin on Parsha Zachar and Purim and end on Erev Pesach. Our eliminating, he wrote a long time ago, over 100 years ago, that the war with Amalek will defeat Amalek, will begin Parsha Zachar, will begin Purim, and will be done on Erev Pesach. That's what he wrote. We hope it ends even sooner and faster than that. But we're still in this war with Amalek. Iran is, no question, Amalek. I mean, I don't know if you, I just read yesterday, more than half the missiles Iran has shot have had cluster bombs. And the International Geneva Convention, whatever countries sign about the morality and ethics of war, is never to use cluster bombs. And more than half the cluster bombs are something that explodes and then sends little bombs everywhere so that no Iron Dome can protect from them, because the little ones that come everywhere and they cause maximum damage, maximum injury, maximum loss of life, which also translates to maximum miracles, that we wake up to 3 salvos of missiles and 0 injured. Miracles, miracles. You're talking about something so pernicious, so dangerous, so lethal, that even countries who say we may go to war one day, but we sign a pact, we're not going to use that. Like even we have a red line. It's bizarre that countries have an agreement about how they'll fight a war one day, but okay, leave that aside for another time. But they agree that that's so unethical, so immoral, so cruel, so evil, that if we ever have to go to war, we won't do that. And that's what Iran is doing, and that's what they're doing for more than half the missiles that they've shot to civilian populations in Israel. And Hashem is like, zero injuries, zero injuries. Miracles, miracles. I don't know who could be alive and awake and watching and reading and not feel more connected than ever to Hashem, overwhelmed with gratitude and appreciation. And yet, it's easy to say when you're reading from the side, if you're running in and out of bomb shelters and you're not sure if you're going to be on the next miracle or, God forbid, the opposite, it's tough. It's hard. So Amalek, their methodology, Amalek is gematria. The numerical value of Amalek is gematria suffik. We know that the whole methodology and strategy of Amalek is to introduce suffik. Amalek is to introduce doubt. Doubt. Asher korcha baderech. Amalek, we came out of Egypt. We walked away from Har Sinai. We were on fire. On fire. Har Sinai was the greatest emunah shir of all time. It was the emunah retreat that we're going to be introducing soon. The Emunah retreat at Har Sinai. Maybe that's what we'll call it. It was the Har Sinai was the ultimate revelation. Unprecedented, unparalleled. Hashem revealed himself and spoke. The greatest Emunah moment, most seminal Emunah moment in all of history. And we walked away on fire, connected, on fire, close, talking to him, feeling him talking to us. And Amalek came along. Asher karcha baderech. Rashi says the word karcha can be kor, cold. We were on fire. They splashed cold water on our fire. They tried to put out our fire. Yeah, you sure there's a God? How do you know? How do you know he spoke to you? Maybe it was AI. How do you know? How do you know? Maybe it was some technology. Maybe somebody threw their voice to make an echo from the mountain that made it sound like it. How do you know? And that same Jew walked away from Har Sinai on fire says, maybe. What if? I don't think so. Pretty sure I'm on fire. I'm pretty sure I'm right. You know what Amalek introduced? Doubt. Doubt. A little shemitz, a shtickle, a little bit. That's all it takes. That's all it takes is a little bit of doubt. A little bit of doubt. Maybe I shouldn't have invested in that. Maybe I shouldn't have bought that house. Maybe I shouldn't have gotten engaged to that person. Doubt is so dangerous. We know what doubt does. When it takes away confidence and clarity and conviction, doubt makes everything fall down and implode. Relationships, if there's doubt, is there integrity? Is there loyalty? Is there trust? Doubt. Doubt and a lack of confidence. And Amalek just casually came along and said, yeah, you sure? You sure there's a God? You sure that was him who spoke? You sure everything was for a reason? You sure? You sure everything you heard in that shir or you read in that article that you learned? You sure? You sure? Asher karach baderech lashon mikra. Mikra means happenstance, chance. You sure everything's for a reason? It's lovely that you want to think, embrace your place. You are lovely, lovely. How do you know? What if you're not meant to be there? What if you're just a victim of chance and randomness? What if? Amalek is suffic. Amalek is doubt. And there are so many people suffering and struggling with so much doubt right now in Israel. Doubt. Doubt about safety and security. That's the, of course, greatest doubt that Iran, Amalek, has introduced. Doubt. Can I leave my home? Will I be near a shelter? Is there enough time to get back? Doubt. Can I get in the shower? How long a shower? You saw the Israeli ingenuity. Within moments, an app, a website, canishower.com, that tracks the probability of when's the best time to shower based on when a next missile might come. Only Israelis can figure out that algorithm and predict when to best shower. Doubt. Do I have enough time to take a shower? Our one daughter in seminary took her two nieces, our grandchildren, out to the park yesterday, and then there was a siren, so she had to casually go with them. How old are they? They're little. 2 and 1? 3 and 1? They're little kids. They're very little. Take them into a shelter, keep them calm. They're now normal. They hear the siren. The kids walk on their own to that room that they're supposed to go. Doubt. Will there be a siren? Can I go? Can I make it to the park? Will I be back in time? Doubt. How about I was on a trip to Israel 2 weeks ago. We were on the last flight out. We landed. Happens to be Friday, 1 p.m. I can't tell how many people have asked me, did you know? Yeah, I knew. President Trump was like, oh, you're back? You're good? Okay, now we can text him back. We're good. We landed Miami. You're clear to do what you want now. That's exactly how it happened. That's exactly how it went down. But there were people who stayed for that Shabbos. Here's an amazing thing about the human psyche. I feel so much better and smarter than them. I'm not. It could have easily have happened to us. If this would have happened, if Khamenei and his chevra had breakfast on Friday morning or Thursday morning instead of Saturday morning, I would have still been in Israel too. I'm not better or smarter, but I feel like I am. Because that's how the human psyche is. They're still there. I'm here. What's the matter with them? Why didn't they come back with us? What's the matter with them? That's just an editorial insight into the human psyche. I'm trying to not feel it, but it's fascinating. It's fascinating how the human brain works. But including Lee, who I've tried to call every emergency hotline to get her home, and others who were in Israel are still there. And they were on a flight. They got to the airport and they said, never mind, you've been bumped. You're not on it. They're on a flight. The next flight, should they go through Egypt? Should they go through Jordan? Should they go through Greece? Should they get in a box with a UPS symbol and ship themselves? I won't tell you what they're considering to try to get back. Suffolk. Amalek has introduced doubt. Suffolk. When? It happens to be, and I'll say this publicly because someone will need to do an expose, I think there's a corrupt scandal going on. There are people who are supposed to be rebooked in the order of the flight that they were on, and they're getting bumped. And yeshiva and seminary kids, who God bless them and I love them and I have kids among them, but are comfortable and can be where they are in most cases. And there are people who need to come back. One person we're trying to help who had a kidney transplant went for his grandson's Hanachas Tefillah, needs to get back to his dialysis and doctors and keeps getting bumped and hasn't been on a flight and every night is up all night waiting and looking at his email and wondering, and should he go to the airport or not go to the airport? Will it happen? Will it not happen? And there's something going on that's wrong that's happening, and someone will need to be accountable for it because something is not right. It's not right. But all these people are living with suffix of doubt. And that's Amalek. That's this war. It's going on physically, and it's going on spiritually, and it's going on emotionally, and it's going on in the email that I just read of the person who says, I'm in a mamad, and I'm missing things, I want to be. And it's easy. I send my sticker to everybody, embrace your place. You are you meant to be. It's hard, and we can't minimize it. It's incredibly difficult. But what else can you do? What else is there other than embrace your place? If you've taken every initiative, you filled out the State Department form, and the other Heimische form, and the third form, and that form, and the 17th form, and the form that your great niece sent you, and the form that the dog sent you. You filled out all the forms. You went to the airport. You've been on hold with El Al for 3 days. You WhatsApped El Al because you heard it was faster. You did everything that you could. We have children supposed to come Pesach, the big milestone we might be celebrating. I'm not allowed to say what it is. We have a big coming for Pesach, and they're nervous, their flight, and my contact El Al emailed, and they wrote back, yeah, we hope so. I don't know if they'll make it or they'll be bumped. Like, what could you do? You took your initiative, and after that, that's how we overcome. You have to. Emunah is not faith. Faith is not discovered in a moment, Tamar taught us. And it's in these moments that I have to lean back and sit back and say, I've taken my initiative, I've done what I can, and now this is where I'm meant to be. If Hashem wanted me on that flight, someone else would have been bumped for me. If I was bumped, it's because it's not time yet to fly back. And now what am I meant to do while I'm here? Where should I learn? Where should I volunteer? Who should I hang out with? What can I do? Where should I shop? What fruit smoothie should I get in Geula? What am I meant to do while I'm here? What's my mission? What's my purpose? Why am I still here? Because after we've done everything we can to extricate ourselves from where we are, what other choice do we have but to lean in, to embrace that place, to accept our mission in that moment? And I say that there's no alternative to that. If we want to defeat Amalek, Amalek is trying to create anxiety and worry and uncertainty and doubt and sleeplessness. And our answer and antidote, the way we defeat Amalek, is Emuna. Not suffix, not doubt. Clarity, certainty, Emuna. You know what? Hashem's in charge. He's in control. Not the El Al agent, not anyone at El Al. He's in charge. So I have to use his shlichim. I have to type to them or talk to them or wait online for them or go to the airport to them. But they're just his shlichim. They're just agents. Kishmam kachem. That's their name. They're the travel agent. They're the El Al agent. They're agents. They're just agents. Who is really in charge? Rosenberg. No, who's really in charge? Who's really in charge? Hashem, the Ribbono Shalom, the Eibishter. They're the travel agent. They're the El Al agent. They're his agents. They may not be very happy with their agency in the moment, but they're agents. And who's really in charge is in Hashem. So I say this with complete, not to minimize, empathy, sympathy, love, support, care, concern. I'm with you. Imchem anochi b'tzara. I'm with you. I have family. We're worried. We're uncertain. We don't know when. But what choice is there to say we did our best? That's it. With my daughter. Who else could we? Oh, we texted a lot. We tried to drive it. Then I posted my Embrace Your Place sticker. Then my family said, saw that coming. Then I said, yeah, what else is that? That's what else? I said yesterday in the Parsha Shir, the last pasuk in Sefer Shmos, we'll read it. This is a Shabbos Chazak. You got to love Hashem. Just when we need it, He sends us a Shabbos Chazak. What happens on Shabbos Chazak? We finish a book, and then we turn to each other and we say, Chazak. And then we answer, Chazak. And then we say together, Venis Chazak. Where does this pasuk come from? Chazak, Chazak, Venis Chazak. It comes from the Navi. Chazak, Venis Chazak, Ba'ad Amenu, Ba'ad Arei Elokeinu. It's a pasuk that says, be strong, and we'll strengthen one another on behalf of our holy land and our holy city and our people. That's what this pasuk comes from. And could it come at a better time? In the middle of a war, hopefully at the end of a war, by the Shabbos, we'll turn to one another in shuls across the planet, and we'll say Chazak, and then we'll answer Chazak, and then together we'll say Vinis Chazak. Together, we'll be strong. But just before we do, the last pasuk in Sefer Shmos, Ki anan Hashem al mishkan yamam ve'ishti alayla bo, le'inei kol beis Yisrael b'chol, Mas'ehem. The cloud of Hashem was on top of the Mishkan during the day, fire at night, before the eyes of all the Jewish people throughout Mas'ayim, throughout all their journeys. One does Rashi, Frakt Rashi, and I didn't bring my glasses. B'chol Masa, Shayunosim Hayanan Shochem B'makam Asher Yachanu Sham. Why does it say the cloud was on top of them when they journeyed? The cloud was also over them when they encamped. So why do you say the cloud is over you when you're on the flight, when you're in the car, when you're on the train, when you're on the boat, when you're in the journey? Cloud's also over your house. The cloud's also when you unpacked in the hotel. The cloud's also over the encampment, not only on the journey. So why does it only say Masayim? Why does it only say the journey? Says Rashi, you know why? Because every encampment is also a journey. When you're in Israel and you're so-called stuck, that's a next journey. You're on a journey based on where you are. So if you're at the airport and your flight's delayed, if you're the red light and you can't go, if you're at the doctor's office and it's taking you forever, that feeling of I'm stuck is also a journey. So therefore the Torah depicts even the encampment as a journey to tell us that encampments are also part of the journey of life. A Yid, a Jew, is never stuck. Never stuck. And I'm sensitive to the people who are still in Israel who meant to be elsewhere. That's uncomfortable, annoying, difficult, painful, miserable, devastating, disappointing, but not stuck. Not stuck. Because stuck suggests that's not where you're supposed to be. But we don't decide where we're supposed to be. We're not the travel agent, the Elal agent. We're not an agent. Hashem is in charge. So it's not stuck, we are. And now the question is to pivot from the anxiousness. Amalek wants us to be stuck. Amalek wants us to talk about being stuck. Amalek wants us to talk about being rescued. Amalek wants us to be filled with doubt and uncertainty and feel, I'm not supposed to be here, get me out of here. I can't take it. And Amunah says, take a deep breath. Restore your neshama with the neshima. It's frustrating, let it out, it's okay. It's frustrating, it's disappointing, it's upsetting. Even channel that to Hashem and say, why? I'm missing things. I miss my family needs me. The rabbi needs me, I gotta get back. Channel that. But then say, but what's my mission? What's next? How will I keep my serenity, my peace, my tranquility, my happiness? How do I maintain it in this moment? Because it's where I'm meant to be. Because if we were meant to be elsewhere, we'd be there. Especially if we made enormous initiative and effort to do it. Don't stop the initiative and effort. Don't think you're going to sit back and Allah is going to send the limo to pick you up and tell you it's your turn. It's your time. I don't think that's going to happen. You have to take the initiative. You have to make the effort. But once you've done. Took initiative, made an effort, done. What else can I do? So that's response to that email. Darshaning up that email with a shtickel amalek, chodesh adar, safek, emuna. And that doesn't happen in a moment, as Tamar taught us, Tamar Biton. That doesn't happen in a moment. Emuna has to be worked on for a lifetime. And the person who has strong emuna muscles is sitting in Israel or elsewhere trying to go back to Israel saying, I took my initiative and I did my best, and now this is where I'm meant to be. What's my mission? What's next? What do I do while I'm here? I want to get back into the text. I have a bunch of other powerful and great and important Emunah emails. Thank you for living with Emunah. Keeps my eyes wide open. All Hashem's miracles. I want to share a recent experience. Blew me away. My granddaughter had a dental issue, required oral surgery to the tune of $15,000 due to the fact that three teeth were fusing to her gums that needed to be extracted. Surgeon was top of the line, would not accept insurance, only cash. Since it was such an expensive proposition, they had a second opinion who was willing to do the work for a few thousand less. It was complicated and invasive. They would put her to sleep with the surgery. The angst and fear was terrible as it grew closer to the surgery date. About a week before her surgery, my granddaughter got a toothache. She went to a regular dentist. My daughter discussed the upcoming surgery. He looked at her daughter and the x-rays, and he thought, this is a fairly routine extraction. You don't have to fuse gums, no complications. He took care of it on the spot for a few $100s. No issues, no terror. Hashem orchestrated the toothache to save them the fear, pain, and money. He held our hand and resolved everything in the easiest way possible. So gratifying to clearly see and feel this Yad Hashem firsthand. Thank you, we are so grateful. I wrote back, it's so beautiful when you see a hug from Hashem, better when it doesn't come with a grandchild's toothache. But that toothache was a gift from Hashem. Sometimes a toothache can be painful. Sometimes a toothache can be, why me? And sometimes a toothache can be, thank you, Hashem. Because that toothache saved pain, worry, and thousands of dollars. Feel free to save it to the global, send it to the global campaign. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, just joking, maybe. Hope everything's well. Small story. But listen, living with Emunah for many years, I tried to actively practice strengthening my Emunah muscle. A few weeks ago, I decided to start baking challah again after taking a long break. Having two kids under two made it difficult to keep up with it. I was excited to get back into the mitzvah. I spent a lot of time making the dough and was really proud of myself. I shaped the challahs, I baked them. Only after they were finished that I realized I had completely skipped the step of letting them rise in the pans after shaping them. The challahs were dense and ruined. I had to throw out all 8. I was really upset. It felt like a waste of time and effort. With money being tight for us right now, it was also painful to throw out all these ingredients. I ended up buying store-bought challahs for Shabbos. I was very disappointed, but still I kept reminding myself what I learned from the shiurim. There's always a reason for what happens, that Hashem runs the world perfectly. I kept telling myself somehow this was what Hashem wanted. I needed to trust him. The challah is where they were meant to be. This week, I decided to try baking challah again, determined to be careful not to miss any steps. As I was about to do a fresh challah, it suddenly hit me. The previous time I had baked, I had completely forgotten to do a fresh challah. In that moment, I realized something powerful. Hashem was protecting me and my family and our guests from eating challah that didn't have a fresh challah taken. At the same time, it felt that Hashem was showing me how important the mitzvah is, almost as if he was saying that if I skip that step, the challahs themselves will not succeed. Instead of feeling upset about what happened, I suddenly felt incredibly grateful. If those challahs had come out perfectly, I might not have ever realized what I missed, and I would have been devastated to discover later we'd eaten them without taking challah. Thank you for the shiurim that truly helped me stay calm in the moment, see Hashem's hand in the whole situation. I'm grateful for the perspective. Wishing continued hatzlacha and emunah for everybody. Again, another example, maybe relatively small relative to other things, but the very thing that you could feel the most frustrated about when you gain a perspective on it is the thing that you're so grateful for. The very thing you were miserable about becomes miserable. A toothache, that toothache just saved thousands of dollars and much more pain. Miserable throwing out 8 challahs, you would have been more miserable to think that you ate and fed challah that you hadn't done hafrashas challah for. Okay, oh boy. Okay, one more. I was listening to your shiur last week yesterday while attempting to take a walk and inspired the short piece of writing I wrote. I thought I would share. This is what the person wrote. Living in Israel during this time is like living with the highest level of intensity of fear juxtaposed with the ultimate faith. It's an important insight. We run into a shelter trying not to internalize that above our heads, the decision of our fate is being decided. Will we live or will we die? It's Yom Kippur every day. I read my Tehillim or scroll through. You leave your house and pray that the 45 minutes you need to go to the grocery store are silent, but at last they're not. So you run to yet another parking garage shelter and reconvene with your new Israeli friends who laugh and say, we need to stop meeting like this. But power, you feel power and strength living here. You know that you're suffering temporarily so that others can live. You know that your suffering will result in the eternal safety of your future children and the world at large. As you hear the mamad doors close, one above and below you with a loud thud, you feel the strength and the unity of your nation. We all go in together, and we all come out and live. We live, and life goes on in Israel. People get their hair done only to show it to the 4 concrete walls they're endlessly trapped around. But the spirit here is to live and to never stop. As I slam my mamad door closed for the 50th time, I picture Hashem slamming the book of life closed on this beautiful nation, saying, you will live because you are mine. Powerful, beautiful. Okay, there's a lot more, but that's a good place to leave it. Let's get back into the text. We're on page Kuf Lamed Hey. Kuf Lamed Hey. Wow. Mika Amcha Yisrael. Mika Amcha Yisrael. Not emails, why me? Woe is me. I can't believe again in another bomb shelter. But look at that. And I want you to know the general attitude. I saw someone the other day who lives in Hollywood, a holy Jew. And he said to me that his daughter called him from Israel that day. She's there in seminary for the year. And she said, Abba, I'm so anxious, I'm so nervous, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so worried, I don't know what to do. So he said, you know, Ketzela, that's understandable, that's reasonable. The sirens, you're running to bomb shelters, there's ballistic missiles. She said, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm so upset because I don't know if I should come back for Pesach. It's silly, Mashiach's going to come any moment, and I'm going to be in Florida for Pesach. I left Israel when Mashiach's about to come. This is a girl, he told me, who in 9th grade, the school was worried. She doesn't really believe in God. She's not really on track, wanting to live a religious life. And now she's telling her father, her biggest worry in the world is, should she leave Israel, she'll feel like a fool. Mashiach comes, and she went to Florida for Pesach. Mika Amcha Yisrael. Mika Amcha Yisrael. Jewish people are extraordinary. When we were in Israel, the overwhelming feeling everyone had, everyone said to us, oh, you came, so you have a front row to the miracles we're about to see? Not, can you believe we're doing this again? Woe is us. Why does this have to happen? Everyone said, oh, you came, so you'll be here for the miracles? I was texting yesterday with a holy friend of Judah, my holy friend. Oh, he's fantastic. So I checked in, I try. How are you? It's hard to find the right words and not feel stupid, but how are you holding up? Is your family safe and strong? Tell me how you're doing. He said, we're fine, how are you? I said, Baruch Hashem, I'm fine. He said, I know how hard it must be for you to not be here now. Oh, I know many other people would have been saying that sarcastically, but both because he's who he is, and he also does know me, that I'm looking into flights of how I could go, that he does know me, that it is hard not to be there now. But he's not writing, what was me, I wish I could be in Boca with you, you're so lucky, you're so safe. He's saying, I feel for you, it must be so hard for you to not be here where miracles are happening right now. This is the Mika Amcha Yisrael, people. This is our nation. This is our family. These are our people. Oh, that's why we're going to win. That's why we're winning. And we're not going to get tired of winning. But we're winning. We're winning. And it's fantastic. It should just continue, Hashem. It should just have the merit. Kuf Lamed Hei. L'chaim Bigesh David HaMelech, Alav HaShalom. David HaMelech, Alav HaShalom. Sameach Nefesh Avdecha. David HaMelech said, Sameach Nefesh Avdecha. At Hashem Samachas Nafshi. God, you gladden my heart. V'avi Elidei Sipuk. God, you gladden my heart. And you brought me to a place of satisfaction. You brought me to a place of enough. One of the things to daven for, David HaMelech says, is Hashem, let me always try to get more and have more, but at the same time be happy and satisfied with what I have. Let me try to want more and have more, but let me also find the capacity to be satisfied and grateful for what I have. The Omer Misnatza ki ani ein yachol lidog lashkita mishtok kusa.
Now
there's a challenge here. If we have drive and ambition and want more, it's going to be hard to only have that and channel that in the area of spirituality. Once we have drive and ambition and aspiration and craving and yearning for more, Emuna, more davening, more Torah, more chesed, more, then once we have this feeling of wanting more, we're also going to want more square footage of our house, more nicer car, more jewelry, more nicer watch, more steak, more. We're going to want more. B'kasha alay adavar l'shtamish b'midazu rak b'avodas Hashem. Says David HaMelech, Hashem, once you put inside me this will and want for more, how do I channel it discriminately, judiciously? How do I make sure that I'm only applying drive and ambition and more for things that are good for me and not for things that aren't? How do I, when it comes to gashmias, when it comes to the physical, I say midas histapkos. Histapkos means maspik. What does maspik mean? Enough. I'm still going to work, and I try to do well at work. I want a raise, I want a promotion, I want my customers, I want my clients, I want my investments to have a greater return. I want that, it's okay. But also Hashem, whatever I have is good, it's enough. It's what you determine is right for me, so it's enough. Amidas histapkos. We're living in a consumer generation. This society today is driven by consumerism. Marketing, ads, the world is always about more. Next, the latest model, update, everything. Your car, your phone, your spouse, the latest. It's trying to, some people, that just went right over. No, you heard? Because if everything is on demand and everything is the latest and everything is upgraded and everything is the newest and everything is the shiniest, then it's hard to not feel that for the people in your life too. Where can you download the newer version of the operating system for your spouse? People, whatever happens in the world is impacting negatively also. Just like, you know, I don't know if you saw this video went viral the other day that was comparing children of the 80s and 90s who fast forward to today, and they say, what do you mean we're going to, in the future? It was, maybe we'll post it if it's appropriate to post, right? So you remember in the old days that you used to make a mixtape? Anyone here ever make a mixtape? You'd have a tape recorder with two tapes, and you'd play the one tape. To record, you'd have to hit the things at the exact same time and get it to start at the same time, stop at the same time. Then you take another tape that had a good song and make the mixtape. And it took forever to do that. But the reality was you didn't do that unless you really were invested in doing that. And most people, I don't want to go back that far, but a record or a tape. So somebody put out a new tape and it had two, maybe three great songs on. Two great songs, two decent songs, and the rest bad songs. But they had to fill the tape, so they put all the songs. So what did you have to do? You had to listen to the whole tape. Because if you wanted to get to the great song, you also had to make your way through the bad songs. But then Apple came out with that little, what was the original one called? iPod. That little iPod. And now all of a sudden it had this incredible thing that you could do. You could download music and you could make what's called a playlist. And the playlist is only the things I want to hear. And now you had the ability to make a playlist. I don't have to patiently listen to what I don't want to hear. So what happened now? Now we want to make a playlist from the people in our life. Stop saying that. I want to forward that. I just want to skip to what I want to hear you say. I only want to hear your compliments and I only want to hear your affection. Your criticism and your feedback, skip. That's not on my playlist. I didn't put that on my playlist from you. I delete that from your playlist. These all, whatever's happening in the world and in technology also impacts our lives and our relationships. So David HaMelech says, this midav histapkus. If I'm going to have a drive and ambition for more Torah, tefillah, chesed, and ruchnis, and spirituality, then I'm going to want more in the physical world. So one of the things we daven for Hashem is, help me feel simultaneously. When it comes to the physical world, I have what I need. I have what you determine is right and best for me. And even while I'm working to have more, but I'm good, I have the capacity for histapkus. It's not just the general secular world. One of the criticisms of some of our from media and magazines and newspapers is they'll have side by side, it's mind-boggling, but side by side they'll have an article by a rabbi or Rebbetzin all about histapkus. We should be satisfied with what we have. Don't crave more. What we have is from Hashem. And opposite it is a $30,000 watch, an incredible Pesach program in the most exotic location, a picture of a rib steak that's a $40,000 rib steak. Side by side is the article in the Torah. These are our Jewish publications today. Is that side by side is an article on being satisfied with Hashem gave you and what you have, but here's what you really should want. Okay, everyone's got to make a living. So how do we do it, says David HaMelech. V'arimidas ha-taiva k'shigashmes mafri la-sagas ha-chachma v'is'alas b'avodos Hashem izbarach. This midah of taiva, this character trait of drive, ambition, desire, yearning, craving, wanting more, that drive, which is good in avodos Hashem, is also not good. It's counterproductive. It's negative and destructive when it comes to the physical. V'lachein ata Hashem samach sameach nefesh avdecha asei ata lema'ani v'sapek es nafshi b'nyani olam hazeh. So in those words of David HaMelech, where David HaMelech is explaining David HaMelech's tefillah, and we also grab on to that tefillah, our tefillah is Hashem, enable me to live that paradox. Enable me to live in that space where I can, when it comes to the physical, the material, feel, I have what I need. I have what's right for me. I have what you've given me, and I'm good to go. But in the world of spirituality, I don't have enough. I want more. I crave more. I'm going to pursue more. I'm yearning for more. Uvizeh perish b'makam acher. Turn the page. Divrei David. And with this, you can explain David HaMelech elsewhere. Tehillim kuf dalet. Azamra lelokai be'odi. Sha'avodas hazimra lelokai hi be'bechinas odi. Azamra lelokai be'odi. I will sing to God be'odi. Be'odi means, the literal translation of the word be'odi means, no, that's the type. That's the vort. Bodhi means in his residence, Azamra al-Akrai al-Kolat Hashem. But he's, Rav David Buchatzer is saying, Bodhi, I praise Hashem how? With what I want my ode. Ode. The word ode means more. So how do I praise or affirm my faith in Hashem? By where in my life I want more. What in your life do you want more of? More money? More things? Or more spirituality, more faith, more experiences, more people. Art Buchwald, is his quote, the best things in life aren't things. The best things in life aren't things. Aren't things. Things, money buys a lot of things. But relationships, experiences, faith, health, these aren't things. So what do we want more? One of the ways to do a gut check, one of the mirrors to hold up to ourselves, one of the questions to ask. Years ago in Amunah Shir, I posed, I only have one friend who does this, Brother Ben, that we should ask each other when we go for coffee, when we see each other, we're spending time, we say, how's your neshama? How's your neshama? How's your neshama? We always said, how are you? So how am I? I'm great. Pesach, I found matzah. It's only $400 a pound, not $500 a pound. We're going away. We're staying home. Jewelry is a sale. Yakira Bella. Whatever. We always say, how am I doing? We answer about things. We answer about things. But the real question to ask one another is, how's your neshama? How's your neshama? Are you feeling connected? Are you feeling on fire? Are you feeling alive? Are you feeling calm? Are you feeling present? Are you feeling ragua, a calm? How's your neshama? So another alternative to how's your neshama, this is all going to come out in our Amuna workbook that we're working on, in theory. But it's going to come out. Is one of the questions to ask ourselves, not only how's your neshama in the Amuna workbook, but where do you want owed? What do you want more? What do you want more? If you could rub a bottle and a genie came out, and he says, I'll grant you a wish of you could have more, what do you want more of? Would your mind go immediately to more of things? Or would your mind go to more of health and wellness, relationships, time with certain people, peace of mind, serenity, faith, Hashem? What do you want more of? If you could be granted a wish for more of something, what do you want more of? Isn't that beautiful, Vort? That's what David HaMelech says, Azamra lelokai, that we sing and praise Hashem, how? Be'odi, with the answer to, what do you want owed? What do you want more of? Be'odi, with my ode, I sing to Hashem, says David HaMelech. Be'odi, he's the king, he has a palate, but he doesn't care, doesn't want, that's not what defines him. He says, Hashem, I declare and I sing my love and my gratitude to you. How? Be'odi, with my ode, with my more, with what I want more of. More dapa mashas, more mesechtas, more nachas from children, Yiddish nachas, Hasidish nachas, Litvish nachas, Sephardish nachas, Ashkenazi nachas, whatever nachas you want. But nachas, more nachas. What's the ode? What's the ode? What's the ode? This is an important question to ask ourselves. It's an important question for spouses to talk to each other about. It's an important question for friends to check in on. And that's why it's in the Amuna workbook, on the Amuna website, on all of the big plans that we have. It's in the Amuna book. It's on the Amuna podcast. It'll be spoken about at the Amuna retreat. And it'll be on the Amuna swag. And it's on this whole world of Amuna that we're working on. Work on Hashem. Help us work on it. Help us work on it. But that's a big question. What do you want owed? If you could be granted a wish for more, what do you want more? More followers? More fame? Bigger influencer? More free stuff? What do you want more? More money? What do you want more? Maybe for some people, they'd give anything for more time. More time. More time of their own, more time with that person that they wish they had more time with. What do we want more? More health? What do we want? More memory? To have a little more as it's slipping or fading? More mobility? What do we want more? What do we want more? What we want more, essentially, David HaMelech is saying, says so much about us. What we want more says so much about us. So, Azamra lelokai, Hashem, I sing to you, how? Be'odi, with what I want more. I don't want more narishkite. I don't want more silly things. I don't want more replaceable things. I don't want more creature comforts. I love them. I'm happy to have them. But if I could ask for one thing, those are not my more. That's not my more. What's my more? That's a big question to ask ourselves. What's your more? What's your more? What's our more? What's our more? And you see this, I'm sorry, did I finish that paragraph? Yeah. We see this fascinating balance in the world of spirituality, more, more, more. Never satisfied, never enough, always growth-oriented, always improving, always growing, always adding. More, more, more. But in the world of physical, enough. I'm happy. I'm satisfied. I'm good. Kedugma, you see this. And we'll end with this. We say in Aleinu, V'yadata yom ha'shevosa levavecha. In Aleinu, every morning, every afternoon. In Aleinu, V'yadata yom, know today, v'ha'shevosa levavecha. Put it in your heart. Shezeu ha'yediyah ha'shiva sheba'olam, v'ein od bilta. So if this, whatever we're about to say, know this today and put it in your heart. Whatever you're going to say next is the most important thing to know, right? Know today and put it in your heart. What should I know? Ki Hashem hu ha'elokim b'shamayim mima'al. She'bechol nyani shamayim avodas ha'yehudi tchiyeh b'b'chinas mima'al. שתומד ירא כמה עליו להוסיף על הסעז בדרגה גבוה כשעומד בעכשיו. אך ועל הארץ מתחס, עניין הארץ והגשרי, שלעבד בבחינס מתחס, שכמה שיוכל לצמצם לדרגה נמוכה יוסר עדף. What do we say? וידעת היום אשר בוסר לבבך, know this today and put it in your heart. What should I know and put in my heart? That כי השם הוא אלוקים בשמיים, ממעל. When it comes to God in the heavens, ממעל, always look up, there's always more to do. But when it comes al haaretz, when it comes to the physical material world, mitachas. Always look down and say, what I have, I'm good to go, it's enough. There's another interpretation to this. I wrote it in the introduction. The newest volume of Yadrim is about to come out, which is the Torah journal of our shul. The newest volume, volume 5 maybe, is coming out. In one of the earlier volumes, in the introduction, I wrote this vort. They say that when it comes to Ki Hashem Elokim b'shamayim mima'al, when it comes to things about Hashem mima'al, look to the people bigger and greater than you and be jealous of them. But when it comes to Al Ha'aretz, when it comes to the physical material world, mitachas. Look at people who have less than you and feel happy with what you have. When it comes to spirituality, look at who's above you and want more. And when it comes to physical and material, look at people who have less and be grateful with what you have. Be grateful with what you have. That's a hard place to live. How do we balance that? Simultaneously, that my ode, my craving, my yearning, my wanting, my desire, my ambition, my aspiration, my more is only in the world of Ruchnius. In the world of Gashmius, in the physical material world, I'm good. I look at people with less and I say, I am happy with what I have. But when it comes to the spiritual world, I look at people who have more spirituality, more amuna, more davening, more. I say, I want more. I want to be more like them. So who are our role models? Who are we jealous of? Who do we want more? Mima'al, mitachas. We pick up with next time. We'll do questions and answers for 10 minutes for those who are in person. Otherwise, may we hear Besoros Tovos, Yeshuos, V'Nechamos.